Nuts and Grape Nuts Flakes presents We the People.
Good evening, everyone. This is Burgess Meredith bidding you welcome to We the People for Grape Nuts and Grape Nuts Flakes, the only breakfast cereals to bring you one delicious flavor in two delicious forms. Now tonight you're going to hear the story behind a song written by three soldiers, and here to sing it is Columbia's new singing star, Bob Hannon. And you'll meet a man who spends all his time defending Brooklyn. And here to bring a story of faith against overwhelming odds is a woman with a message I believe none of you will ever forget. These and many more real people come to tell real experiences, experiences you hear only when we the people speak. Of the Libyan desert on the north coast of Africa lies Tobruk, vital military base and important station on the North African highway. On Good Friday of this year, the German Panzer Division sweeping east struck at Tobruk. But the British garrison wouldn't budge. For 3 months, 88 days, Tobruk has been besieged by the Germans. Every newspaper in the country has carried the story of Tobruk as page, front-page news. And the man who wrote these news dispatches is here beside me now. The only foreign correspondent in Tobruk during the siege, United Press foreign correspondent Jan Yindrick.
Thank you, Mr. Meredith.
Will you tell us, Mr. Yindrick, why Tobruk is so important in the North African war?
Well, it lies directly on the line of the German march towards Egypt and the Suez Canal. And as long as the British command Tobruk, they can intercept the Nazi supply lines and almost paralyze their advance to the east.
See. What was it like being in Tobruk during the siege?
Well, it was pretty grim. The British have kept the enemy about 12 miles outside the city with a ring of trenches and pillboxes. When the German tanks attack, they let them go through the lines. Then the British mow down the infantry which follows the tanks. Afterwards, the tanks are captured one by one behind the lines.
See. Did you have any narrow escapes, Mr. Yindrick?
Well, once, when I was driving a truck past an anti-aircraft battery, I saw the guns begin to move. They were getting range on some bombers overhead. I couldn't hear anything because they were diving with their motors off. But pretty soon I heard plenty. Bombs began to fall all around me. I jumped into a trench and let the truck run driverless up the road. Another time, I saw a thermos bottle lying in the road. I started to pick it up when a soldier yelled at me to be careful. It turned out to be a trick bomb disguised as a thermos bottle.
It must be pretty hot there, isn't it, Mr. Yindrick?
Well, I've seen the thermometer go up as high as 120 degrees. And the amazing thing is that the troops can actually fight in such heat. But the morale in Tobruk is very high.
Do the troops have any time off?
Oh, yes. And as soon as a soldier is relieved from duty, he makes a beeline for the ocean to take a bath. Those sandstorms are really grimy. And in between blitzeroos, that's what Australians call enemy attacks, the band gives a concert. But all they could play when I left was Waltzing Matilda, a goofy Australian tune that makes less sense than the Hutsut song. Sometimes the soldiers would play cricket, using a palm tree for a wicket, half a pickaxe for a bat, and a wad of taped-up newspaper for a ball. Oh, yes, there were newspapers in Tobruk. Three of them, all mimeographed and carrying the latest world news received by radio from the BBC. Some Australians even bet on the horse races back home, but they were disappointed because they never found out who won the Melbourne Cup.
Mr. Yindrick, do you think that the British in Tobruk will be able to hold out indefinitely against the Nazi siege?
Well, just before I left, I had a chat with a major who told me, we can hold out. We've got to. As long as the highway through Tobruk is in British hands, the Nazis cannot do much damage in Egypt. And he added, we're going to hold out. There will always be an England.
Good. Come up to the microphone, please.
Coming, Mr. Meredith.
That's it. Fine. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like you to meet Harvey Puckett of Birmingham, Alabama. Mr. Puckett is blind and has been so since infancy. I want you to hear his story because it's a great story of a man's courage in facing a handicap. And in a moment, you're going to hear him play music in a manner I doubt if any of you have ever heard before. Mr. Puckett, this is your first trip to New York, isn't it?
Yes, sir. And it sounds like a very interesting city.
It sounds like
What's the difference between the sound of, well, New York and the sound of Birmingham?
The sound of New York and the sound of Birmingham?
Yes,
sir. Mr. Meredith, New York is louder, of course, but the sounds themselves are different. Down our way, I hear trolley cars, horses, and automobiles mostly. But up here in New York, there's riveting, boat whistles, there's the roar of the elevator trains, and the taxi drivers and the coppers, they're always yelling at each other. And there's an awful lot of brakes squealing, too, Mr. Meredith.
Yeah,
in fact, there's a little hum all the time. Almost all the time is a little hum.
Yeah.
And I guess that hum must be the millions of people here all talking to each other. There are a lot of ladies in New York, you know. And people do like to talk.
They do.
I can't see. But if ever I receive my eyesight, I think I'll know New York just by the way it sounds.
Good. Tell me, Mr. Pocket, suppose you tell everyone what you had in mind when you wrote to us on We the People.
I wanted to come up here and play my postcard for you, Mr. Merritt.
Play your postcard? How do you do that?
I take this postcard, touch it against my teeth, and by flipping it with my fingers and making different shapes with my mouth, I can produce rhythmic, understandable tunes.
Well, you don't make your living that way, do you, sir?
No, sir, Mr. Meredith. I earn my money selling subscriptions to magazines over my telephone and anything else I can sell.
I see.
Of course, I don't get any money just from playing on my postcard. It's more of an advertisement to me, a good advertisement, though, because in a contest sponsored by Pazit Radio Jamboree,
mm-hmm.
Birmingham Parade of Talent, a few days before I came up here, I won $15 because I received the most postcards and my total score was 3,435 pieces of mail.
Good for you. Well, but why do you really like to play, sir?
The main reason I like to play the postcard is because it really makes me happy.
Good.
In fact, it makes me so happy, Mr. Meredith, that I thought I'd like to come up here and play it for We the People.
Good for you. Go right ahead, Miss Parker. What's it going to be, sir?
It shall be Listen to the Mockingbird.
Fine. Listen. Are taking the youngsters away for a couple of weeks and leaving your husband to fend for himself, here's a tip. When you write those reminder lists for him, like, don't forget to put the cat out and be sure to set the alarm for 7, add this notice bottom, plenty of grape nuts on the pantry shelf. That way you'll be sure it gets a swell, nourishing breakfast every morning. For any husband can fix himself a grape nuts breakfast, and every husband loves them.
Yes, the men folks go for that grape nuts flavor. And grape nuts for breakfast give that busy husband of yours a wide variety of bodybuilding elements to see him through his morning's work in high. In every helping of grape nuts with milk, there are 6 of the 9 basic food essentials which everybody needs every day. There are proteins, calcium, and phosphorus. Vitamins A, vitamin G, and vitamin B1, the essential energy vitamin. What's more, grape nuts have been enriched with an important added amount of B1. And now bring you more B1 per serving than any other popular ready-to-eat cereal. Grape Nut Flakes have also been enriched with vitamin B1, and they too provide valuable, varied, all-around nourishment. So to make even a light breakfast the right breakfast, just you make it a Grape Nut breakfast.
Attorney Island.
Yes. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Brooklyn has been the butt of many jokes. In practically every city, of course, the joke is always on some nearby community. You know, in Chicago, it's Peoria, I believe. And in Hollywood, I know it's Pomona. And in New York, it's Brooklyn. Now, Great Nuts next... Oh, hold it, boys. Great Nuts' next guest has asked for time to say something about that, and his name is Sidney Asher, and strangely enough, he is from Brooklyn. Now, all right, Sidney.
I'm president of the SFPODRAB.
You'll have to come again with that one.
SFPODRAB. Okay. Society for the Prevention of Disparaging Remarks About Brooklyn.
Oh, I get it, yes. Now, how did your society start and how do you operate?
I started in 1938. I noticed that people everywhere were disparaging Brooklyn. So I talked to some friends of mine from Brooklyn. In no time, we had a club with 100 members. If any of us heard people say something critical about our town, we wrote them a letter telling them all about the wonderful things in Brooklyn. We told them about our wonderful Navy Yard, beautiful Prospect Park, glamorous Coney Island. Other words, I try to build up an ever-loving friendship for Brooklyn.
Good for you. Now, Mr. Asher, what are some of the most common insults to a Brooklynite?
The most common insult is when you say you're from Brooklyn and the person laughs right in your face. Some people are always ribbing Brooklynites about the way they talk. They claim we say burl for boil, skirt for skirt, and foist for foist. Maybe some of the people do talk that way. But there's nothing wrong with it.
No.
It's just distinctive. And there's another beef we have on our hands. That's with the people who claim the Gowanus Canal smells bad. And it does, too.
Now, is your club putting on a campaign to clean up the canal?
Oh, no. Over in Brooklyn, we don't admit that it smells bad. We just say it's not as fragrant as it could be. And then there are those who claim that technically Brooklyn is an island off the coast of the United States and is not a part of North America.
That's silly.
But I've got a stopper for that one. I tell them the only borough in New York that's on the mainland is the Bronx. I can't imagine anybody would want to live there.
Oh, now, wait a minute.
Some smart Alex used to say, are the Dodgers still in the league? But with the Dodgers leading the National League by 3 games, that puts a stop to that crack.
You bet it does. You bet it does.
And we're proud of the Canarsie tribe of Indians who lived on what is now Brooklyn, the tribe that sold Manhattan to Peter Minuits for $24.
Well, I don't think anyone would consider that a very good bargain for your Brooklyn tribe of Indians.
Oh, no?
No.
Let me tell you a story very few people know about that deal. The Canarsie, a Brooklyn tribe of Indians, sold the island for $24. But they didn't own the island. So Minuit had to buy it again from the tribes living on the island. Darn clever, those Canarsie Indians. The Brooklyns came out with a clear profit of $24.
And Brother Asher, that ain't wampum, is it?
No.
Thank you. Brooklyn, thank you. All of us, thank you, sir. Thank you for coming here tonight.
Warriors of the turf, Whirlaway, Seabiscuit, Dallin Fox, Man O' War, all great thoroughbred champions whose names have blazed in headlines and whose thundering hoofs have flashed across the finish line while millions cheered. Tonight, Great Nuts has brought a racehorse owner here as we the people's next guest. I'm sure you're going to get a great kick out of his story, and his name is Eddie Dandria of Ozone Park, Long Island. Now, go right ahead, Eddie.
I'm a mechanic on the IIP subway in New York. I've always been nuts about racehorses, but there was one in particular, a beautiful big black gelding. He never won any big stakes, but he was my favorite just the same. I used to walk home from my subway job to save enough money to go to the track to see that horse. One day while I was patting him, his owner came over and told me the horse had gone lame. He was all washed up because of a bad front right hoof. He told me he had to do away with him. I said, no, you can't do that. He patted me on the back and said, Eddie, you're fond of this horse, aren't you? I replied, he's a great love in my life, and he's still a good racehorse. All he needs is some love and attention. The owner said, Eddie, give me $1, and the horse is yours. I gave him the dollar, and I got the horse.
Fine. That's how he became a racehorse owner, huh?
That's right, Mr. Meredith. I went out and rented a stable for $8 a month. That meant that I had to cut down on my other expenses. I didn't eat as well, but that didn't matter. I couldn't afford having a vet take care of that bad hoof, so I learned how. That big black gelding kept getting stronger, and the hoof was growing out just perfect. A short time ago, the track stewards examined his hoof, and they say he's in shape to run again. And are we happy?
Well, that's a great story, Eddie. That's a great story.
But I haven't told you the best part of it. In a few weeks, my horse is going to run his first race, and they come back out at Belmont Park. I had to give up a lot of things to pay for his medicine and feed and stable. But when the trumpets sound off and the horses go out on the track and my horse goes prancing down there with them, I'll be double repaid for every hour and every cent I've spent.
I'm sure we all know how you feel, Eddie. Would you mind telling us the name of the horse?
His name is Lamont.
Lamont. Tell me, Eddie, what do you think is his chances?
Well, that's hard to say. Maybe he'll only be given a 50-1 shot, but I don't care. To me, he'll always be the favorite.
Fine. Thanks, Eddie. Best luck to you. Best luck to Lamont.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Great Nuts' next three guests got in touch with We the People through our maestro, Mark Warno. So I'm going to ask Mark to step down from his podium. Mark, want to introduce him? Will you?
How about it? Okay, Burgess, the mic's mine.
Right.
First of all, ladies and gentlemen, these three young fellows are Jeep.
Just a moment, Mark. Don't calling our guests names, insulting them.
Well, you're wrong again, Burgess. It's no insult. That's a compliment. Jeep is a nickname given to selectees in the Army, and that's what these fellows certainly are.
Yes, that's right, Mark. I forgot that. Jeep.
Well, you know, a couple of weeks ago, these Jeeps wrote to me from their camp at Fort Houston, Virginia. They sent me a copy of a song they'd written called The Jeep's Lament. Mm-hmm. And here they are, the three musketeers of song. Acting Sergeant Herman Morse of New York, Private Frank Jelinek of Bloomfield, New Jersey, and Private Leonard Corman of the Bronx.
Well, I'm glad to see you, fellas. Very glad to see you. Tell me, boys, what are you lamenting about?
Sylvia.
Sylvia, will you tell us the story of Sergeant Morse? Will you tell us?
Well, it's like this, Mr. Meredith. We three guys met at Fort Dix just after we got into the Army. We got to be pals. Well, one day, a friend of Frank Jelinek's came down to see him. Her name was Sylvia. Sylvia Schlossberg.
Good.
Well, Frank introduced us to her, and we liked her very much.
Yeah. In fact, they liked her too much. Now, go on. Take it over from there, Private Jelinek.
Well, Mr. Meredith, we three Jeeps may be pals, but I always say there's a limit to friendship. And Sylvia was my girl, I think.
You think? Does Sylvia like you best?
I don't know. She'd never make up her mind.
Oh, I get it. So you're just sitting around waiting, is that it?
Yeah. Uh-oh. But still, all in all, I wasn't going to fight with the boys, and I wasn't going to cut off my nose just to spite them. So when Sylvia said she'd come down to see me again sometime, I said, come ahead.
I follow. Now, Private Corman, you take over, will you?
Well, Miss Schlossberg kept visiting us at the camp, and it made life very pleasant for us. But then the three of us were sent to another camp at Fort Eustis, Virginia. No more Miss Schlossberg. The three of us used to sit around nights talking about her.
Yeah. And then one night, I had an idea. I said, let's write a song about how much we miss Sylvia. Lenny said, what good will that do? And Frank answered, maybe when she sees the song, she'll be so impressed, she'll visit us even if we are in Virginia. Well, we wrote the song, and what do you think?
What?
Sylvia does not read a note of music.
Uh-oh.
And that gave me an idea. I suggested sending our song to Mark Warner so he could play it on We the People, and Sylvia could hear it and know how much we missed her.
So you sent the song to Mark, right?
Yes, but we never dreamed We the People would invite us up as well.
Oh, we're like that, but we've done more than that, Private Corman. And I have a little surprise for you. We've gotten in touch with a girl. We've gotten in touch with her. You've been thinking, and she's standing over there in the wings right now waiting to greet you. Come on out, Sylvia!
Oh, hey.
Here they are.
Nice of you to say hello again.
Hello, Cornman.
Hi, Joe.
Hello,
Mark. How do
you think they look, huh?
Oh, they look fine.
They look all right? How'd you like to marry a Jeep?
Oh, lots of fans.
It does, huh? Do you think a song might have anything to do with it?
It might,
huh?
They listen confidentially. Which one of these guys do you like?
Come on.
I ain't telling.
Come on, tell me. Come on, I'm not going off the air. You've got to tell us, will you?
Well, we're Private Morse at first place.
Private Morse at first
place.
Well, boys, you've heard these boys' stories, and now you've got to hear their song. And we've invited Columbia's new singing star, Bob Hannon, to sing it for you. And Mark has made a good arrangement of the boys, so now you'll hear the first performance anywhere of the Jeep's Lament.
Supposing I could change this camp and make it old Broadway, where the lights don't go out at 10 o'clock and the waiting 6 each day. I change my leggings for a pair of spats, my overseas cap for a silk top hat. Change my rifle for a gold head chain, a line of trucks for a subway train. Supposing I could change all this and really make it true, it wouldn't take a miracle to do this just for you. The roll of the drums, the cannon's roar, darling, my salute to you. I'm just supposing all of this for you.
All right, that's swell, boys. That's swell song. Good luck to you. Come on. Don't let that moss get away now.
Keep it up.
Now, a story of two families named Jones. In a certain small American town, two families by the same name live on the same street, get up at the same time. Now, here's how the first Mr. Jones, he comes downstairs like this.
Another hot day. Was that breakfast? Nothing around here to make a guy feel hungry. Give me a cup of coffee.
Now, here's how the second Mr. Jones comes downstairs.
Good morning, honey. Give me a kiss. Great nuts for breakfast? Oh, well, just pour me out a good big dishful. That flavor sure does hit the spot. Just show me where it is.
This same name, same street. They both get up at the same time, but what a difference in the way they start the morning, right?
Yes, sir. When you start the day the Grape Nuts way, you start it with a smile. Well, there's something about the Grape Nuts flavor that sure is mighty special. It's malty rich, sweet as a nut, with a zestful, wide-awake goodness. You see, that flavor is a blend of two luscious grains instead of only one. And that's why it's different from any other cereal, a flavor that stands right out. And you can enjoy this one delicious flavor in two delicious forms. Grape Nuts, crisp, crunchy kernels, and Grape Nuts Flakes, delicate, toasty brown flakes. So get your family downstairs on the run. Just holler, Grape Nuts for breakfast.
Ladies and gentlemen, listen to these lines. There was a time when faith began to slip, when I had lost all that I had to lose, or so it seemed to me. I lost my work, my house. I had no home, no food, no shoes. Then suddenly I felt myself ashamed, for I, who talked of shoes, then chanced to meet upon the busy highway of my life a man who had no feet. That philosophy was first written by a Persian poet named Sahadi more than 700 years ago. Now just think about it a moment, will you? And then let me ask you, how many times have all of us talked of shoes? The man in the poem did. You kicked that Sunday it rained and you couldn't go to the beach and you fretted all afternoon because the boss didn't say, swell job landing that order. I know I've done it. Yes, I've done it. And you, madam, you worked yourself into a rage, didn't you? A beautiful rage because the butcher didn't send your order until 7:45 and you wanted dinner at 8. That was very important, dinner at 8. Now, nobody is objecting to the good American custom of kicking at things that they don't like. That good old fighting American quality of divine discontent. But there is also value in being able to take it. And there is reason to have pride in the way, well, for instance, the way Lou Gehrig accepted the things that fate brought on him a few weeks back. Lou Gehrig, the idol of baseball, the Iron Man, never missed a game. And then you remember that piece in the paper said he died of an obscure disease with a long Latin name, a disease that science has not been able to cure. Now, Lou had plenty to kick about this last year, but he never let out a peep, and he kept his faith. Tonight, we have a woman here who's also kept her faith. Her name is Mrs. D.H. Seema. She lives in Woodhaven, Orlando, Florida. Mrs. Seema, will you tell us your story?
I'll be glad to, Mr. Meredith. I have three sons, Henry, Leroy, and Herbert. Hello, boys. Henry is the eldest, and until he was 6 years old, he was perfectly healthy. Then one day, I noticed his feet dragging when he walked. My husband and I were poor people, but we spent every penny we could spare taking Henry to one doctor after another. At last, a specialist in St. Petersburg told us Henry was suffering from a rare disease which was making his muscles waste away. It was the same disease that killed Lou Gehrig. The doctor told us there was nothing anyone could do, that it was only a matter of time. We prayed for a miracle, but there was nothing we could do. Our second child, Leroy, was a strong, handsome little boy. But one day, when he was 6 years old, I was watching him, and suddenly my heart almost stopped beating. Leroy's feet were dragging just as Henry's had at first. Leroy had the same terrible wasting disease. There was no hope. And then, my third son, Herbert, he too was stricken with it when he was 5 years old. We went to doctors again, but it was useless. I hated the world. I hated everything. But at last, I realized all I could do was pray. It took time, but I regained my faith, faith that gave me the strength to accept our burden. And I passed that faith along to my three helpless sons in their wheelchairs. One night, the thought suddenly came to me that there were other people with troubles, people who had not even the faith in God to sustain them that our little family had. I decided to do something about that. I began telling stories from the Bible to my sons and anyone else who came to see us on Sunday mornings. The first Sunday, there were a few children there. The next, there were more. And from then on, more and more. After a while, fathers and mothers came, too, to join in our prayers. Then I felt we should have a church. There was none in our community of Woodhaven. It was too small and poor for that. But I began taking collections. In a little town 30 miles away, we found an old tumble-down church, which we bought for $35. Then everyone in our community pitched in to help. We took that church apart and moved it, piece by piece, to Woodhaven. It took a year to finish our church, but we're mighty proud of it. Today, my boys and I don't think about our troubles. We've learned to think beyond ourselves, to be grateful for the blessings bestowed upon us. And above all, through the illness of my three sons, which inspired the building of our church, all of us have started thinking of the other fellow, and we found new faith.
You people out there, well, we little people everywhere who worry about trifles, I hope you heard that. This woman has built something real. With her hands, with her mind, and with her heart, she turned a tumble-down shack into a citadel of faith. So that the next time some trifle interrupts your day, remember, for every one of us who talks of shoes may chance to meet upon the busy highway of our lives a man who has no feet.
for We the People is under the direction of Mark Warno. This is Harry Von Zell saying good night, and for a good morning, eat great nuts. This is a Columbia Broadcasting System.